Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. My name is Joe Thomas. I am the Echo's Everton FC correspondent. Alongside me, we've got regular contributor Gav Buckland, and we've got a voice which is heard far too infrequently now on these parts, my colleague Connor O'Neill. Only one place to start, I think, and it's not the last gasp heartbreak at Bournemouth, as frustrating that was. If you can sense the tiredness in my voice, it was partly because of having to go down there on Friday night and coming back and getting back late well into Sunday morning, actually. But the tiredness is actually probably more related to the news of Easter Sunday evening when Everton's accounts dropped. We knew they were coming. Obviously, there's an April 1st deadline for them. The closer it got to that deadline, the more likely it became that they would come out, and they seen it and they weren't pretty, were they, Gav? We'll go headline figures first. Yeah. £89.1 million loss. That's more than, well, that's roughly double the £44.7 million that they lost the previous year. £330 million worth of debt. That's more than double, 140-odd from the year before. Obviously, a lot of that on stadium expense or money committed to stadium expense. Obviously, what that doesn't include is the $200 million that 777 have since lent to the club after this year ended at the end of June of last summer. Probably just also important to state to anybody that's listening, that £89.1 million, that overall number, that's not the number that's carried over into the profit and sustainability case. That figure will be the figure of 89.1 minus all the deductible allowances. So don't, anybody that's panicking and thinking that the breach was that high, don't worry, it's not quite that. We'll have more on that in a minute. But Gav, I'll come to you first. Just on these accounts, your first thoughts, please.
Not surprised in that if you've listened to this podcast, indeed, when the news broke about the second commission, it was quite clear. We needed another £40 million, didn't we? Overspend, at least just for PSR. Once you add on the additions, which are probably about that you'd allowed, that's probably adds another £30 million. So we've had to have overspent by at least £70 million to breach PSR. So that's like £70 million less £30 million allowables gives you a £40 million that would cause you to breach. I'm a little bit surprised the figure's high, substantially higher, £20 million or higher. Also surprised, we spoke about this at the time, Joe, didn't we? There was a smoking gun there that we thought was, perhaps we didn't, hadn't taken account of previously. And there isn't really, is it? It's just basically down to a number of reasons. The profits on player trading have gone down by £20 million. Mm-hmm. The cost of the squad, the amortisation word, has gone up by £10 million. And we've obviously lost the USM funding, and that's probably another £15 to £20 million. So those are the three reasons. That's how you get from 44 to 89. And there may be some mitigation there in front of, about them has been placed in front of the commission over the USM funding. The concern I've got when I see that is, and a lot of people said this, we've seen warnings from commissions previously in the working with the Premier League, cut down your spending, and the pay bill hasn't gone down at all. And I'd say the cost of the squad has increased by £10 million. So it's gone up. So that all those arguments about trend that we put into last commission have now reversed themselves, haven't they? And that is the, I think that's the concern I've got.
Yeah, I think we'll come on to the implications from a profit and sustainability case in a minute. But just in terms of those headlines, obviously 89.1, I mean, that's a significant loss, isn't it? And as I say, roughly double what it was the year before. That takes about £500 million worth of losses now in the last 5 years. Now, obviously, the impact of the pandemic is included within there, but that's not pretty, is it?
No, it's not a good look in the context of that's 22-23. And we'd had conversations with the Premier League before then. Over our spending and being warned, and in that context, it's not pretty, is it? What we've done there, I think, is in the summer of 22, we've gambled that we bought. We bought Onana, McNeil.
£91 million worth of fees, didn't we? Obviously, that's not £91 million up front. No. That's over the course of those players' contracts, and that's Amadou Onana.
Yeah.
That's Idrissa Gueye. That's James Garner. That's Dwight McNeil. That's Neil Mopay.
Okay, and that was £35 million what we spent the year before, just purely on transfers. And I think we spent that because what we were gambling on at that time was, I know we ran to about PSR and stuff, is I think we thought, you know, about all that arguments about in-stadium incest and stuff like that, they were unresolved at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think we spent that money on the basis that we're gambling because we think we'll get those allowables will go in our favour, so we can spend this money now. What went against us is those allowables didn't go mm-hmm. in our favour. And so consequently, that's one of the reasons why we've breached again, for the current commission. But yeah, we didn't know. So this was also said in the commission, wasn't it, that, you know, that there was no, so wasn't it, our spending has continued into mm-hmm. 2022-23. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned in the commission and the appeal. And in that context, in terms of the behaviour, it's disappointing, isn't it? That's the concern I've got, really, is disregarding previous warnings.
And just before I go on to Connor, it's a technical term which you can probably help us all a bit with. This idea of the material uncertainty about the ability of the club to operate as a going concern.
Yeah.
Now, this was a factor in last season's accounts, but in last season's accounts, that was mainly in the event of relegation. Basically, if Everton were to go down,
yeah,
it wasn't clear where they were going to get all the money from to pay off all their bills for the following 12 months, all their operating costs, was it?
Yeah.
There's been an expansion of that, I think, this year, in the sense that even if the club survive in the Premier League, there's still a bit of a gap towards the back end of the year, the financial year, that will need plugging.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that Everton has become, from a very difficult position already, maybe 12 months ago, over this 12 months, it's a club that's become less sustainable?
Yes, where we are at the moment. I mean, remember, these accounts go up to June 23.
Mm-hmm.
Where we are in April 2024 is a different place.
Yep.
Not necessarily a better place, because that gap has basically been plugged by the 777 funding, yep, hasn't it? That's the thing. And they're obviously not mentioned here because 777 weren't involved at the time. And that gap, that materiality that you're talking about, has been plugged by them. And that's then ties into the ownership thing, which is a different kettle of fish, isn't it, which is still to be resolved. And that could go either way. But And is this the warning thing, isn't it? And we've spoken about this many times on the podcast, is this is up to June 23, mm-hmm. where the club is 10 months down the line, is certainly not in a better place, are we, financially?
No.
And those concerns that are raised in the report are perfectly valid, and that's caused us, hasn't it, to seek funding from 777. They'll have their own agenda as well in terms of that. But that's why we've needed bailing out, really.
And the club's reliance on other people's money, basically. That's yes, where we are.
Yeah, yeah. And the concern you've got, really, when you see this, you mentioned the debts, is we're borrowing money to pay back money we've borrowed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into that position, it's like paying your mortgage on your credit card, isn't it? Once you get into that position, you're in a difficult place. And only, the first thing that needs to happen there is the ownership issue needs resolving. Either way, and what happens then on, we'll just have to wait and see that fork in the road. But yeah, going back to the point, though, I'm not surprised.
No.
I mean, if you listen to this podcast a couple of times, you've spoken about this, not surprised. It was always going to be more than 70, 75 million.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised by the amount over and the reasons why I think to get it, just to wrap up.
That's it. Like, yeah. I'd like to think that we've been pretty clear while that we've anticipated a damaging set of accounts.
Yeah.
Hopefully, regular listeners haven't been left in any doubt over that.
No.
And that's also kind of what has underlaid some of our perhaps reluctance to come out too heavily in favour of the club since the second alleged breach, because without knowing the numbers, it's just very, very difficult to have a conversation about where the club might be in PSR terms.
Mm.
There perhaps isn't a smoking gun that we thought. No. There might be one big lump sum that's there that we weren't quite expecting. But there is an accumulation of lots of different ones. And I think perhaps most worryingly, and we'll come on to this again in a moment, is that trend, that idea that a club that has been in trouble, has known it's in trouble, and albeit during this financial year wasn't yet aware of things like the points deductions that we could get and how some of the calculations and how some of its spending would be interpreted by the Premier League when it came to a commission, you know, it's clear that the argument that the club was moving towards a more financially responsible place, that it put forward in its first hearing, which was over the previous year's accounts, hasn't really continued into this next year, which is obviously troubling.
There's one final point. We spoke about this before we came on air, as it were. Is there was one peculiar line about Moyes Keane, wasn't it, where he says in the accounts that Moyes Keane was sold in 21-22. He said that it was in a group of players, but Charleston was sold.
And Lucas Dean.
But the our understanding, I think, and you know, of the time, was that Moyes Keane was sold in 22-23. That was the deal in terms of the deal with Juventus.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why I think surprised by the amount is when we've had conversations about this, we'll get a bit of money for Moyes Keane, but actually that was appears to have gone in.
That's it, because we knew that Everton were getting a loan fee for each season from Juventus for that deal, and they were going to. We thought they were going to realise the transfer fee at the end of that deal. And what these accounts suggest is that, you know, that big chunk of money that was expected to come at the end perhaps actually came a year earlier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe the club negotiated to get the money earlier, or maybe, I mean, maybe it's a mistake in the accounts, but it's difficult to see it as a mistake in the accounts, bearing in mind the numbers also kind of reflect that money might be missing.
I think it would make sense, though, wouldn't it? It would be 21-22. Bear in mind, they were doing the best selling Richarlison at the end of the financial year to live within PSR. Mm. Whether they thought, well, actually, Juventus are going to pay us next year, let's come to a new...
There was a lot of talk about Juventus trying to come to the table for an agreement with Everton.
Yeah.
Wasn't there? And perhaps maybe something was done that we didn't know about at the time.
Yeah, it might have suited us for PSR purposes. Rather than getting 20 million at the end, is get like 10 or 15 million, you know, 12 months early. And that's why. And that was just a surprise in line, I thought, in the accounts, because I thought our profits would have been greater.
Yeah.
Because 40 million off Anthony Gordon. So that was a bit of a strange one, but... Not really, I'd say, not really surprised, the 89 million figure.
Connor, obviously, you know, you saw this break last night. You know, you've worked in this world for a couple of years now, and you, of course, I'm sure, don't mind me saying on the air, an Everton fan as well. How did you feel when news of this dropped on Sunday night?
I wasn't surprised, because I think we, you know, like we've alluded to already on this podcast, we all had an inkling of what was coming and what was, you know, about to emerge from these accounts. I think the two things for me that stood out most as a fan, more than anything, were and still are, the fact we were having to use other people's money to survive. Mm. And, you know, it's quite clear. It's been quite clear now for a while, hasn't it, that 777 are very much prompting up operational cost, which is wages, you know, bills, etc.
And it's probably, and just to jump in there, so these, obviously 777s aren't in the picture for these accounts, but what is in the picture that we think is probably gone is in these accounts, you've got another year of substantial contributions from Fahad Moshiri, yet another £70 million in his equity, taking his total, basically his loans, but interest-free loans that essentially being treated as equity in the club, now up to £450 million of his own money that's been pumped in on that. Yeah. Which, you know, is also fascinating, isn't it? But go on, sorry.
So, you know, you've got that angle of, you know, that's a worry if you're having to use, you know, basically relying on someone else to keep you afloat. And the biggest thing of all is the ownership takeover thing needs to come to a head, and some sort of outcome needs to emerge, because it can't come soon enough, can it? Because it's quite clear now that wholesale changes need to be made at the football club, and we need to start operating in a much smarter way. Like Gav said there, it's quite worrying, isn't it? Because, you know, it feels like every warning we had on for the Premier League for years, we've never really acted on. Like, because everything still is we're almost doing the same, despite the warnings and what transpired a year earlier. So, you know, it's quite clear that, you know, a proper structure needs to be put in place now. And obviously, at the minute, it's tough, isn't it? Because there's probably a lot of people at the club with a great cloud hanging over them. You think of Colin Jones, only an interim chief executive, stuck between two owners, essentially, in Josh Wander and Farhad Moshiri. You know, one might own the club soon, one might sell the club soon. So, you know, you can imagine it's quite tough for someone like him. But, you know, Everton need, as a football club, I think, need clarity, and as a business, they need clarity, and they need to start moving forward and moving forward fast, because this can't carry on. Because ultimately, you know, you dread to think what happens if we do get relegated, because all the warning signs in them, the accounts, which obviously official documents, are frightening. And I think that's the most worrying thing as an Everton fan, is that once again we have to find a way to stay up in the Premier League, because if we don't, you do dread to think what is coming next.
And where the development from the previous year's accounts, which were worrying anyway on this, is that even if Everton survive in the Premier League, there are still issues over cash flow, money coming into the business, isn't there? And that's a bit of an issue. But probably also, and I think we're just in a very unhappy position here, where seeking clarity over the ownership issue is not the same as saying that we want the Premier League to give the green light right now to 777 either, because, you know, again, we've spoken a lot about the controversy surrounding them as potential owners as well. I think if anything, this highlights the situation that we're in a position where there may not be a particularly happy ending, because obviously one thing that should be, nobody should be in any doubt of, and obviously we've written and spoken about this for over a year now, is how poorly the current regime, or perhaps the regime that was largely in place up until last summer before some of the big changes, have governed the club from a financial perspective. I think that's clear for everyone to see. We can see the repercussions of that, not just in the accounts, but also on the pitch. But obviously 777 don't look like the perfect solution either.
As we sit here now, you know, how many, you know, 6 months is it since 777 kind of emerged on the scene as, you know, possible owners of Everton Football Club? And there's probably more questions about them now than there is answers 6 months on. and that's the big issue, isn't
and
it?
I'll put you on the spot here a little bit. I think you're better placed than us from a understanding of some of these numbers and figures and positions to perhaps answer this. But obviously, we've got those concerns about going concern and the club's ability to find cash in certain events. Now, for all this being said, none of this is saying that anything like administration is inevitable, is it? It's far from that. Obviously, it's not a healthy financial position, and I think if the third option not mentioned then, you know, we've said the Premier League turned down 777 and Farham issues back to square one where he's trying to look for new investors or whatever, that doesn't make administration inevitable, does it?
No, we've restructured the debt that we've got. There's lots of ways we can avoid that. In terms of come to deals with the creditors,
but obviously we're not in a healthy position, that's the problem, isn't it?
And also, we've not got who are the decision makers at the club at the moment. Conor made a really good point there, but I'm coming to that feeling as well. As an aside, MSP aren't mentioned in the report at all, by the way, so I thought it was strange.
They're mentioned briefly as one of the sets of people at the club. I think the MSP loan is factored into some of this club's accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is the club, basically, the way it's acted over the last couple of years, is it just wants to do everything to ensure that we're in the Premier League when Bramley Moore is open. Mm-hmm. If that means overspending, you know, against the regulations and stuff, and buying players that we shouldn't be buying players, but that in theory helps us on the pitch. Is there a view that actually our plan is just do what needs to do to keep us in the Premier League? If that means going in front of the commission once a year or whatever, then that's what we're going to do. Because the alternative is we weaken ourselves on the pitch to such a degree that we will be relegated. And I'm just thinking that.
I reckon, just
on that, I know it's interesting, but I was talking to someone about the football Nottingham Forest recently, and they made a good point. They were talking about their own, obviously, who's a very interesting character, I think is the best way to describe. But he had the belief, that basically the Premier League wouldn't go through with deducting points from clubs who breach PSR.
Yeah.
So Forest gambled, basically, and said, well, you know, we will probably have to overspend and we will breach PSR, but we will get a fine. But the ultimate angle is the money that we will get because we'll stay in the Premier League will offset that fine and will be a much better place for it. So the argument there is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a couple of behaviours there.
You know, you know, it's almost let's gamble and do this because as long as we stay in the Premier League, we get a fine, it'll be offset anyway because the money that we're going to revenue. It's more about don't go down. But he had a bit of a belief that they're not going to go through points deductions, you'll just get a heavy fine. Yeah. But the money you will get from being in the Premier League club will.
I think the kind of, you know, what you're working through in your head there makes sense, Gav, in the sense that I think the Fahad Mashiri regime at Everton is split into two very different segments, and the first one where the ambition is to turn Everton from a mid-table side into European side, with the ambition of obviously pushing them up the table, spending all that money to, you know, to make the club a better footballing operation and then reap the benefits of that. And it's very clear that after that failed, the second half of his tenure has very much been a case of the best realistic legacy for him, or achievement for him and those around him, is the stadium.
Yeah.
And it's maintain your Premier League position,
yeah,
to still be in the league when you get to that stadium. And there probably has been a degree of gambling, say, for instance, in this summer, the summer in relation to these accounts, of that spend, thinking maybe we can outrun whatever the punishment is. I think it's important because whilst, and again, we'll come to this very shortly now probably, but whilst we'll probably criticise that summer of spending and the amount of it, it's probably worth stressing, in fairness to the club, that whilst it will have been aware of its PSR situation, or roughly aware of it, at that point we had no idea perhaps quite how severely some of these things would be taken. We didn't have the knowledge of points deductions and things like that would be down the line. That doesn't mean it was acting responsibly. It doesn't mean it wasn't gambling, but perhaps different decisions may have been made had they had the foresight to see what was coming. The problem that now Everton have as is they've kind of pivoted. Their position is worsened to such a point now where they're just trapped, aren't they, in this spiral where, by trying to spend whatever it takes to get into the Premier League within their means, they're also kind of undermining their ability to stay in the Premier League because they're getting points deductions, but also they're probably undermining to some extent the benefit to which the new stadium will have, because obviously that will bring in a significant amount more money for the club. And one of the issues that the club currently has is the limited amount of money it's bringing in at the moment. Goodison Park brings in less than £1 million per match day.
Yeah.
You know, the club's spending £13 million a month on wages. If you've got two home games, there's a big, you know, to put that into context, Spurs are getting £6 million a game in terms of, you know, income from home matches. So there's clearly significant gains to be realised there. But obviously, the bigger your debt, the more your interest payments, and, you know, the more some of those benefits will be, you know, be neutralised.
Absolutely. I mean, if you get an extra £35 million, £40 million, you know, a year from Bramley Moore, but you're paying X amount of interest. I mean, you know, it's going to eat into your benefits. I mean, Spurs is only paying something ridiculous, isn't it? They only pay 1% interest rate, isn't it? Off their loans. So that their interest cost for their stadium is negligible compared to how much they're getting in. And that's something that I'm just wondering if Farad had maybe done I spoke about this, didn't we? An earlier funding deal for BMD that was probably on the table might have been worthwhile, but you didn't see COVID on the horizon.
No.
Ukraine war has all impacted. So there has been some, mitigating factors for them. But you are right, Joe, in that, you know, this whole thing, the damage could be in the long term.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just before Bramley Moor is open. Is once it's open, you'll then see the impact of this particular period will eat into the benefits and how much so, we don't know yet.
I don't think in any way we can sit here and say there's a bright blue future on the horizon either way. Because
Perhaps not in the immediate short term, there is
obviously, you know, a lot of grey clouds hanging over the football club at the minute, but it just looking at the accounts and reading the report last night on my way home from the office, it does hammer home that, you know, the future is incredibly bleak if Everton aren't playing in the Premier League next season.
Mm-hmm.
If they're in the Sky Bet Championship because they've been relegated because they've been deducted more points, so, you know, we haven't accumulated enough points between now and the end of the season, you do dread to think what is on the horizon. Because Everton are, you know, like we all know, a Premier League club is a far better prospect, isn't it, than a Championship club.
Yeah.
And that really, I think, hammered home for me last night when you read them accounts that they've got to stay up. They've got to find a way to stay in the Premier League.
We'll go on to...
which will come probably into the chat shortly. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's probably more significant development yet to come on that. That's the second, the outcome of the second case. But just before we do that, some more numbers that perhaps aren't so relevant to that, but we should probably cover anyway. Frank Lampard's team, his departure, that cost about £7 million by the looks. Also significant being the departures of the former board members, of just over £3 million cumulatively. My reading of the report is it looks like Denise Barrett-Baxendale, the former chief secretary, got about £2.5 million in compensation. Which is, you know, again, when we look at the state in which this club finds itself in at this current moment, has been for some time, I think is something of interest to say the least. We'll move on to PSR. Where we think this leaves us in terms of PSR, and I'll introduce some new numbers to this one. Perhaps the main one for me being the fact that the wage to turnover ratio actually went up in this set of accounts from 90% to 92%, which for a club that was already trying to cut its cloth feels like a backwards step. Now, there is some context to that. Obviously, turnover went down. So obviously, if wages actually stayed relatively stable, but because turnover went down, the ratio it went up. But obviously, those incomings that came in during that summer of spending that we've already referred to, you know, plus the free signing of James Tarkowski, well, you've got to pay him, and some of the other deals as well. Obviously, that offset the benefits of the likes of Cenk Tosun falling off the wage bill, Fabian Delph falling off the wage bill, and you know, several of other, Richarlison falling off the wage bill. And I think probably one of the issues that we're going to see, and I think we already predicted it's going to be an issue because the Premier League said it was an issue in the first case, looking ahead to the second one, is this idea that the Premier League clearly took a very, very dim view of Everton's summer of spending on the Lampard, didn't they, Gav? And that's clearly going to be a key factor in this case. So this case, obviously, we know the allegation is that Everton have breached the £105 million loss limit over the previous 3 years. Our reading of the appeal documents suggests that we thought that Everton had about a £40 million wriggle room.
Yeah.
So they could lose however much they would lost once the deductible allowances are taken out. They could have lost £40 million and still come just under. Obviously, they didn't. So we know that at least £40-odd million of the £89 does count towards the PSR cost. We don't know how much. I think it's probably reasonable to look at this and say that the new breach is probably no worse than similar to the last one, and quite possibly a smaller breach, that £19.5 million one, albeit still a breach. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Fair. You can talk to me in again, because we haven't got a whiteboard there, you could do some. No one needs you.
Well,
but
you say that, people can't see this because we're not doing this from the camera. We do actually have a whiteboard.
The thing is, you know, from the way 21-22 is that the allowances for academy and women's football and all that type of stuff, infrastructure, was in 21-22 was £35 million.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So if we've lost, you have to bear with me, if we've lost £89 million, take off £35 million off that, that makes our the losses for PSR is £54 million. Mm-hmm. Now, we were carrying forward, I think, 60-65 million. So our total losses, I think, for PSR are about £120 million. Mm-hmm. Against £105 million threshold, which is £15 million breach. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of things there, isn't there? Once we haven't spoken, this is getting into the weeds of accountancy, but is it going to be an interesting one how it was handled at the commission? If we've restated the previous year's accounts, haven't we?
Yes.
So this thing over, you know, the incest on the stage, we can't have it. Well, we've actually appear on face value to disregard what the commissioner said and has taken the incest cost out of our PSR calculation, which is quite interesting. But either way, I would say, and from what I was reading, people who know more about this made last night, the general consensus is it's between 10 and 20 million pounds, I think, this breach, which puts us in similar territory to the last one. But it's different though, isn't it? It's a different set of circumstances here. I do think, and I've had this lots of conversations on X, whatever it's called, you know, how the USM the sponsorship, how a commission will look at that. You know, they may say, well, we might say, well, that was £20 million. We didn't have access to it. I know it's a discussion about whether we voluntarily got rid of the sponsorship or not, but we've got 20 million we didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
That's mitigation. The commission might say
20 million pound they haven't got, and I think
yeah.
I think it's probably, look, I mean, we're clearly quite damning of the club and the way it's been operating. But I think we can all probably agree that the proactive decision to suspend those sponsorship deals was one that made sense, wasn't it? That
was the right thing to do.
That was the right thing to do, you know. So hopefully that is.
And no one was sitting at the time saying, "Don't do that."
No. And that's completely different to the last argument over the stadium sponsorship, where there was no documentation, whatever. This is 20 million we had, and we haven't got it. And so the club, I think, will argue won't be mitigation. Again, there's always these things, always counter arguments and counter arguments, isn't it? You know, the commission might say, well, okay, but you carried on spending as if you still had that 20 million quid.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it becomes very, very murky. But I do think that USM thing, it will be a big talking point. But I do think the major thing is what you just said there, Joe. I don't know what you think, but it is the fact that we've carried on these accounts.
Reading is. The, you know, obviously the £89.1 million overall loss is awful, and it shows a continued failure to address the problems of the club's finances. From the profit and sustainability from the second case, which was obviously argued last week, and we'll get a verdict for within the next week, I think April the 8th, so next Monday, because we're here on Easter Monday, we'll find out the verdict for. But my view, having gone through the accounts, is I don't think there is any clarity over what that panel will do.
Yeah.
I think that we've had three panels sit on three cases so far: the First Seven case, the appeal, and then the Forest case. And they've all come at the regulations from a slightly different perspective. Now, it looks like Everton have breached, and it looks like they breached with a similar amount of last time. Now, I think that in terms of mitigation that matters, they can point to the USM money. I think that was the right decision, proactive decision. They reckon that's cost about £20 million. That Everton can show a tangible loss in this season's, in this latest set of accounts that they couldn't in the previous one. For those listening that aren't sure about that, that's because the argument over USM in the last case wasn't over the sponsorship money for things like the shirts or the women's shirts or the training ground. The argument, because Everton had that money in that set of accounts, the argument in the first hearing was over the naming rights for the stadium, with the idea the argument from Everton being that Mashiri and those companies had agreed a £200 million, 20-year naming rights deal, and the plan was to bring it forward. So rather than it come into effect once Everton were playing in the new stadium, but to bring it forward to 2 years ago. So essentially, Everton would start getting access that first to £10 million a year a couple of years earlier. Now, the problem that Everton had was they had no documentation to prove that.
No.
And that's what the argument about USM was in the first hearing. In this one, this is the first set of accounts where the sponsorship money that was coming in, and you could evidence, well, that's dropped off. So there's a loss of £20 million. I think I think that's genuine mitigation. I think that the club should get some merit for that. Other key issues, I think, on the negative side of things, in the 3 year period that Everton got deducted for last time round, obviously they had two very bad years. By the time we got to the third year, a breach was inevitable unless they made a profit. And whilst they still breached, they cut their losses quite significantly, and therefore they could make that argument in the last case to say that we're operating on a new path of more financial responsibility. Our trend is good. Give us some benefit for that. Well, that's completely shot out of the water, and it's because it's all gone up. You know, the wage ratio to turnover has gone up. That's a problem. Squad costs have gone up. They went and spent, they went and committed to £90 million worth of signings in that summer. So that is completely blown out of the water. So the trend is a problem. I don't know whether or not they will treat a second breach as an aggravating factor. You've got two arguments there. You might go double jeopardy, and that might be the, okay, two of these 3 years have already been dealt with, therefore you're going to punish them twice for the same the same years. And that might help Everton's course. On the other hand, you could go, well, you breached it once and you breached it again, and therefore you've done it twice, and that makes it even worse. So that's cancelled itself out. I mean, one of the things that really kind of concerns me is just that Everton, we're in a position, we're going into January 2023. Obviously, we know that the losses were £90 million. Well, they were looking at £130 million of losses until they sold Anthony Gordon.
Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting one because for what I've just said about Trent, what Forest did in similar circumstances when they're heading towards a breach and being warned of that breach is not only did they not sell Brennan Johnson for another, well, 7 months by this point, when you look at the January, they also carried on signing players. Mm. And from an Everton perspective, you could say, well, they didn't sign anyone that January and they got rid of one of their best players for a big fee that would help towards the PSR number. So will they treat that as a mitigating factor? Ultimately, I just don't know where they're going to come down to because I think there's already been inconsistency with the way these things have interpreted. But what I do think is that it seems established, the Forest case seemed to be of the view that it was established that a breach would the starting point for a breach would be a 3-point punishment, yeah. And then the aggravating and the mitigating factors would argue it up or down. And one of those aggravating factors would be the size of the breach. So it's not just, you know, when Everton got £19.5 million, it looks like the starting point was free and then they still got additional points for the size of the breach, isn't it? So we could end up in a situation where we start at three, go up maybe a point or two because of the size, and then yeah. The mitigating either brings it down or whatever. I just don't know. That's a very long-winded way of saying that there are lots of pros and cons from these accounts.
It's all in the hands of the commission, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that is, and again, yeah, that lack of clarity is a problem, and you know, we haven't
makes our job harder because you can't predict.
Yeah, we haven't been huge, proponents of the Premier League and the system they've set up in this. But, you know, that I think we've said that that's had problems as well and raised more. Their handling of these cases has raised more questions than answers. And I imagine that, you know, when we get the verdict on the next one, we're going to have more.
Yeah, I do think as well around the commission. Oh, it's gone. So it's a past tense, isn't it? Is what's not in our favour. Again, like we were guinea pigs for the whole PSR exercise, you know, in the last hearing, you know, the first hearing, as it were, for us, is we're now guinea pigs for the double jeopardy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so whereas the first time we went into bat, as it were, we were then the test case for everything else, and people were looking for that commission to give some sort of guidance for future commissions on handling PSR cases. We are now the test case for a double jeopardy case, and again, the Premier League will be looking for the commission to provide some sort of, you know, guidance and set some precedents in how you deal with the double jeopardy issue, as you've just covered there, Joe. And I don't think that helps us either, to be honest with you,
no.
Because it's a completely different decision that was made, different factors made that the first time out in last November. So it'll be just be interesting to see how that's handled. In terms of, you know, these numbers from yesterday obviously feed into that. You just get the impression again it doesn't help you when you're the guinea pigs for it.
There's two elements to this as well. One, I think that when it comes to judging these second accounts, it would be wrong to say that some of the issues in the second case will be a case of Everton not learning from the first one, because the way in which the time frame which these have been dealt with meant that a lot of the mistakes, a lot of the decisions which will underlie the second breach were made before Everton knew the outcomes of the first. And it's clear that there were some grey areas yeah. there as well. So Everton are unfortunate in that, but they haven't had chance. They were making some of these decisions before they'd had the chance to even be told that they'd made, some of them were going on a mistaken logic in the first place.
So that's
you know, an unfortunate, albeit they put themselves in that unfortunate scenario by breaching in the first place, but that's it. But again, you know, it's clearly that Everton have been the test case for this, as the first one always will be. And it's clear that where Everton have gone has had an impact on everyone, because it's clear that the way Everton defended their first case impacted how Forest had approached the defence of their case. They went to Everton and thought, they've been punished for challenging this, we're going to comply as much as we can and we're going to get rewarded for it, and they were. And also it's clear that the 10-point penalty handed to Everton initially had a significant impact on what other clubs spent on the January transfer window as well, isn't it? So
yeah. It would just be interesting that, I mean, but I've covered that point before and we've covered it previously, that in all this summer spending in 2022, we were operating in the dark for PSR purposes, because the stuff that we'd asked the Premier League to judge on, you know, the famous, infamous stadium interest and all this type of stuff, they'd not made the decision on.
No.
So we actually didn't know where we stood for PSR purposes then. And as I say, we took a bit of a gamble. We thought it would turn out favourably for us, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if that'll be weaved in at some point.
And you do wonder as well, like that summer, don't you? Everton's done a lot of business quite late on. A lot of other business come later on. Some of the, you know, you think of the season already started when Onana signed. I think McNeil signed before the season got underway.
Yeah, Mope was well into
Mope
the season.
Mope was well into the season. Cody was, I think, well into the season.
Yeah, a couple of games.
A lot of the business come out a lot later than it. That's something, it almost is, you know, perhaps we were even between the lines too much here, but we were waiting for them outcomes, and they didn't come in. And you probably got a manager sat there and Frank Lampard going, well, you know, any players, you know, like we can't wait forever, you know, time's ticking and the season starts, and maybe that's why we were
waiting,
when the outcome wasn't coming.
And the thing is, we never found out about the allowances we were asking for till the December via phone call. I mean, and so I do think, as much as we were saying before about having been spending to keep ourselves in the Premier League, I do think that's something of 2022, there is a little bit of mitigation, the fact that we didn't know where we stood or where we were standing, because there was a whole lot of stuff that we told the Premier League in March that 6 months later they'd still not given a decision about. And I'm just wondering if that will be in our paperwork. It doesn't excuse it as such, but it is something that is a little bit of a grey
area. Well, when you think like that, somewhere we sold Charleston before about the end of June, and then we don't bring any players in until August, essentially. We're basically ranking the month of July off, which is you know, pre-season, aren't you?
And they told us in the December, so we end up having to sell Anthony Gordon in January. So, yeah, there's a few. I think it's right, and we should always remember this. We were unlike this current year, 2023, we were still very much in the dark about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. All this stuff about commissions and 10-point deductions and what you can have and can't have for allowances and for profit and sustainability. Nobody knew anything really about that time, you know, and that's why we were operating in a little bit of a grey area. And I do think that's a little bit, probably tenuous, a little bit of mitigation for some of our behaviour. Yeah.
But I think we probably all agree that would I be right to say that we're all anticipating a deduction of some sort stemming from this hearing?
Yeah, I think it's just.
I don't think it'll be as many, but yeah.
I just think it's the aggravating factors of the fact that we've already been done before. Let's face it, 2021, we weren't great either. We've been done before. I don't think the double jeopardy thing will come into it because our performance in the last year, which has not been passed judged on this, 2022-23, wasn't part of the last commission, is so bad. That's why we've breached. I think that's not going to help us. The other thing is, as well, we saw with Forest, they got -2 points for cooperation and early playing. You know, how will that play into it? You don't know. Yeah. But my guess would be 4. So we get 10 points for the season, which was the original intention. It seemed to be
now, obviously,
Mine is 2 to 4.
The Forest case seemed to establish a starting point of 3. Yeah. And I think if everybody who's listening will have their own ideas about how to interpret the aggravating and mitigating factors we've just discussed, but I think it's probably fair to start your workings out at 3 and then go up or down depending on where you're going to be. Obviously, you know, this is speculation. We should have a concrete answer within the next week, and Evan should have a rough idea themselves because they'll have heard the arguments put forward by the Premier League in that case as well and argued against them themselves. You would have thought. Now, I mean, just such is the state of this club and where we're at. Obviously, we're 45 minutes into a football podcast and we get to talk about a ball being kicked. Unfortunately, it offers us no reprieve, does it? Gav, I'll start with you.
You can keep this short and sweet,
but the thing is, this is the problem, isn't it? Because obviously, when Everton are 3 points away from the relegation zone and we've just had a conversation we're anticipating further points deduction, then going the 12 games unbeaten in the league is clearly a problem, as it would be in any season, but... Bournemouth, Gav, I mean, were you following it? What were your thoughts?
I'm just going to pick on Connor's point. It's only 45 minutes in any pod now before we start talking about football. This stuff is just typical. But my thoughts, I was disappointed in the performance. Bear in mind, you had 3 weeks off. We spoke on Friday, Joe, that we felt that 3 weeks would give us ample opportunity to come back looking refreshed, players looking fit, and perhaps you've got one or two things to work on. And that wasn't the case at all. No. As was pointed out by a few people over the weekend, it was worryingly similar to the 6 week break that Frank Lampard had. And you thought that when they come back in the January, then let's hope we've worked on a few bits here and refreshed, and we'll be up and running. And you just never got that impression at all from a very early part of the game on.
Me, myself, and Chris Beasley went down on Good Friday. went down early because we thought the roads would be bad, but they weren't actually. We flew down. It was, that was probably the one thing that went okay. And I was positive going down, as those who listened to the pre-match podcast would have heard. And yeah, the sun was shining down on the south coast on Saturday morning. I did one of my little videos and I was generally feeling upbeat. I thought 3 weeks off, good chance to reset, recharge. Some of those players were looking exhausted. Game against a side that seems already beaten, game against a side that leaks goals as well. I was feeling relatively optimistic, and once again this club's made me look like a fool for having that faith in it. Yeah, I too was disappointed with the performance.
Yeah.
The first 10 minutes, Bournemouth looked the better side and it looked quite worrying. But then the game actually quite settled down quite a little bit, really. And by half-time, I think, and Bournemouth had another little surge just before the break, but I think I tweeted at half-time saying it's basically a game between two evenly matched mid-table sides. That mid-table being if you add the 6 points onto Everton. And they were largely cancelling each other out, but Bournemouth looked more threatening. Then second half obviously unfolds. Now, Evan go one behind to the slanky header, that's frustrating. And where I was really frustrated was in half an hour that followed that, Evan didn't look like scoring. They just didn't look like scoring. It's that age-old problem. They go behind, they don't look like they're capable of getting back into a game. And I thought that, unfortunately, that was true against, you know, what's a mid-table Bournemouth side, and that is troubling. What's even more troubling is the fact that despite not looking like they were going to get back into it, O'Connor, they did in stoppage time. A rare slice of luck for Everton, and people will be screaming at me, talk about a penalty. We will talk about the penalty in a minute. But I just want to set this up first. But obviously, you know, calamitous defending from Bournemouth. Everton, for all that we've criticised them, I think, on the pitch this season as well as off it, I don't think they have much luck. I don't think they've had much luck for a long time. No. They got that slice of luck, but such is the nature of this side, this club, just everything at the minute. They couldn't hang on because they managed to conspire to find an even more calamitous way of throwing it away. Connor, what were you thinking?
That was the biggest disappointment. Well, there were two big disappointments. One was the performance because it was largely very, very poor. And it was alarming, I think is the best. Because, like Gav said, you're looking at thinking, well, you know, Sean Dyche literally had a week in Portugal with them players to work on things and up with different ideas and different ways and whatnot, and it looked like we'd done absolutely nothing in that week in Portugal. And I actually wrote a piece in the build up to the game saying, you know, the last time I went there, Frank Lampard on that famous 2 visits in 5 days left, you know, returned to Merseyside with more questions than answers hanging over his head, and people having a lot of doubt and things creeping into the mind. And Sean Dyche needs to make sure that he's not, you know, in a similar position come 5 p.m. on Saturday evening. Unfortunately for him, he very much was in that position where people now start to have a little bit of doubt and a little let's be bluntly honest, he's been extremely lucky, because any manager who has the record that he has had so far since that December 16th, was it Burnley, I think? Fulham Cup game a few days later, which obviously I don't think we've recovered from that on a penalty miss. But I think when you look from there to where we are now, there's not many managers in the Premier League would survive this current run.
Yeah.
And also when you think of the fact Farhad Moshiri previously been a very trigger happy manager trigger happy chairman stroke owner. And
he'd probably write a manager in the first place. some people would say, wouldn't he?
And I just think he's... Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are mitigating factors, of course, and all this, and, you know, there's been a lot of off-the-pitch and on-the-pitch things to deal with. But, yeah, I think he's been extremely lucky. And I think, you know, even the fact he's not under pressure as we sit here now, because, you know, he's not really under pressure, Ian, says a lot. And I think, you know...
I mean, it's yet another indictment as to the state this club is in, that a manager can go 4 months without a win and not be under any pressure, is it?
Well, there's no
because there's no one to make a decision.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I know Kevin Farwell's there, but even who is he speaking to right now? But just before, I mean, we'll come to Dyche perhaps a bit more specifically in a second. The Seamus Coleman own goal, Gav, where do you think blame lay for that?
God, I had a discussion about this beforehand. I think Pickford.
Yeah.
I think he had. I know our first sort of course of action Pickford gets stick is to defend them, because mm-hmm. I think some of the stick he gets is unwarranted for lots of different reasons. But he does give ammunition to his detractors on occasions by the, I know all goalkeepers make odd mistakes, but I just thought on he looked a little bit wobbly mm-hmm. on Saturday for a number of instances. Connor may have a, I know Connor's got a view on the first goal, but I thought he's got to be strong there
mm-hmm.
and he had, I thought has there anything be, I was trying to think has anything summed up a season than that own goal by Coleman?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the timing of it, the nature of it, you know, the state of the game, it's just summed up Everton Football Club where we are at the moment. I thought Pickford should have taken charge there. Maybe Brantface would have done more. I think
Coleman
doesn't cover himself in glory. Like, I'll start mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah.
But Jordan Pickford's got to take control of the situation. He's the goalkeeper, he can see everything, he can come off his line and catch the ball. I just thought he didn't cover himself in glory. And I also thought, and this might be incredibly harsh, but there's something about the first goal where I just was a little bit like, how's that gone in from there? Like, it didn't, it kind of seemed straight at him a little bit.
I think the problem that Pickford has with that first goal is that I think we can all understand why he doesn't come out to claim the ball.
But
if you're not going to claim the ball, then you have to get yourself in position to potentially save the shot that might come. And it,
I just didn't think it was a very strong header and it felt straight at him. That could be incredibly harsh, but I just thought he could have done. It wasn't one of his best days, was it?
No.
It carried on a trend. Obviously, he gave Belgium the 90. Obviously, he thought he was still playing for Everton when he passed the ball to Onana.
One of the things that stuck out for me was when Beto scored, and everyone said it's probably, I wrote in my match report, I think it was about 90 seconds before the Everton supporters celebrated because it was one of those goals where, I mean, Everton having one of those seasons, especially with some of the decisions, where you're just expecting a decision to go against you. And I think everyone was there thinking, Everton aren't going to get that lucky.
Yeah, like, there's a foul somewhere.
Surely there's a foul somewhere, but luckily there wasn't. I come back to the penalty now, and I mean this will lead us into the Sean Dyche debate, because it's probably quite a good little way into it, or emblematic of the situation that we find ourselves in. I mean, I think it was a penalty. I asked the Premier League; they said, the VAR did check it. They said that it was minimal contact, therefore didn't require. Back to it, but obviously there's an acceptance that there's contact there. I understand that contact doesn't necessarily mean a penalty, but I mean, Tyler Adams doesn't get anywhere near the ball, does he? And I don't think there's a delay in Dominic Calvert-Lewin going down. I just think it's a penalty. Gav, do you think it's a penalty?
All day long.
Yeah. Connor, do you think it's a penalty?
Yeah, and that is an absolute load of nonsense.
You know, we've got Howard Webb. Webb writing back to the fans forum in the week saying, refusing to kind of go into detail about all those decisions over Christmas, and he might have another letter on his desk soon after this one, and I think it would be justified. And I think that
when you see some of the ones that have been given recently, not just against them, because we're obviously going to say Garnacho, but some of the ones that you've seen given around the Premier League, mm-hmm. that is just a penalty.
This is the problem we're trying to assess Dyche in general, because we come away with a damaging, disappointing defeat in performance. But what you can say, and as you've probably been able to say for quite a few times over the course of this 12-game winless streak, that decision, which we all think should have gone Everton's way, goes for Everton, all of a sudden it's a completely different scenario. 60 minutes in, assume, and I know this is a dangerous thing to assume for Everton, but all of a sudden, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's standing over that ball 12 yards out, and there's every chance Everton are 1-0 up. We know they're better protecting the lead than chasing, than chasing from behind. Calvert-Lewin's broken his scoring duck, and all of a sudden we're probably sitting here, with a different complexion on the football thing. But we're not, and that's
also a fantasy land joke. Given the last time we got a penalty,
so many of the issues might have been resolved. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, the way in which the stoppage time unfolded, I think that robbed Sean Dyche of the ability to properly use the penalty call as a as a perhaps an excuse for what I still think was a very bad performance, or not for a very frustrating and timid performance, given what was how much that game important that game was and the break that they'd had. But now we'll go on to Deitch in general.
Can I just make one fair point about the penalty which I spoke to Connor about before, and I think it's going back to the Garnacho one, which I thought was a clear penalty is. But in VAR, on live games, other ones, TNT on Sky, they have more cameras around the pitch, I believe. So you get far better, those type of incidents, like the Garnacho one, you get far better, more detailed coverage of the foul for VAR purposes than you do on Saturday, which, let's face it, it wasn't exactly a great view, was it? Either way, you got two distant views of the foul. Whereas if I think of it being in a live game, we've got super slow-mo close-up and stuff that would have shown you the contact and the impact of it that maybe wasn't as apparent on Saturday, the way it was covered. And I don't think that helped us. Yeah. I don't think the VAR cameras were great because it was quite clearly a foul.
I think it's a penalty. But so we'll go back to Deitch because we ended up on him a little bit earlier than I was anticipating. I mean, for all that we've just said, 12 games without a win, clearly you'd be under scrutiny if you were a manager at any other point in a club's kind of season and you're going to deliver something like that. But where are you two on him in general? Because I'll start by giving you my verdict. Obviously, I believe that he should be under more pressure than he is, and he isn't because there isn't that structure at the top of the club at the moment. But I still wouldn't sack him, and I still think the context is very important. I asked him in the off-camera press conference, the bit we did at Bournemouth, but looking ahead to the Newcastle game, I asked him, well, I basically said, if you don't win at Newcastle, then you'll have overseen Everton's longest winless streak in Premier League history. Is that something that concerns you? And he said, no, absolutely not. He said that. But he basically said that he is more concerned about the destination rather than the journey. You have good runs, you have bad runs. What matters is the overall outcome. We've already discussed this. Probably Everton's situation for the season, success is Everton staying in the Premier League at whatever, just staying in the Premier League, however difficult that, however difficult they might make it, it's doing that. I think the context is still important. I think you still have to look at this side and say, well, albeit it's gone a long time, trajectory is worrying. If you had the 6 points on, because they're 6 points that Deitch, they've earned on the pitch, and Deitch isn't responsible for the deduction, then they're 9 points from safe. Sorry, from trouble, and I think that's a significant achievement with this squad. And I think when you look at the chaos in which he's operating, it's very difficult. And I think that when you look at the last three seasons, the last two seasons, I think Everton with better squads have gone right to the final week of the season, still not sure whether or not they're going to be a Premier League club. And when you look at this now, Everton are probably two or three wins away from safety, depending on what the points deduction is. But Everton have gone 12 games without winning the Premier League and had a six-point deduction. And he's got the weaker squad that Everton have had in the last three seasons. And there's still 3 points clear. So I kind of think it becomes very difficult because who do you get in if you replace? And that's not me saying that there's not a conversation to be had in the summer or anything like that. And that's not me saying he's doing a good job. And you do have to sometimes deal not with the past but with the present, and the trajectory is troubling. But, I mean, would either of you actually pull the trigger if you were in charge at this stage?
Not this stage, but I think there are major questions moving forward. I think there are elements of this where he probably himself probably thinks the football and content against him. Just look on Saturday where his team has denied a Stonewall penalty and then his captain turns the ball freakishly into his own net in his first minute stoppage time. He must be thinking, God Christ, even by the standards we've seen this season, we're finding new ways here to throw it all away. The big thing for me is, and this is the most cliche saying of them all, football management is a results driven business. Mm-hmm.
Which he also always says himself.
And the last 4 months, the results have been nowhere near good enough. Now, obviously, there's mitigating factors, circumstances, etc.
Yeah.
But they've not been good enough. Yeah. And also, large parts of that, what we're being served up to watch as supporters, is not good enough. It's very one-dimensional. You take one player out of the team, everything seems to fall apart. Mm. It's not great. And I think my issue with Sean Dyche moving forward is you don't see much of a long-term plan.
Mm.
And I think there are
is that
probably better options.
That you don't see much of a long-term plan from him and his team or from the club?
From him and his team. Mm-hmm. Because I think they've had enough time to work on different things.
Do you therefore think that, say, for instance, Everton survive this season? I think there isn't really a way in which they don't have a rebuild over the summer. Now, whether that's a rebuild and they've actually got any money to spend is a different matter. But do you, would you say if Dyche kept them up, you don't think he deserves to be the person that oversees that? Because
as things stand now, no.
Because again, like, I still think it's important to remember that, you know, he hasn't had the ability to really change the squad or anything like that. He kept them up in very difficult circumstances last season. That was a very good job, obviously well remunerated for it. We see that in the accounts. His team got the several million pounds of win bonuses.
Yeah.
Survival bonuses. And, you know, he's still had a difficult squad to work with this season. But, I mean, Gav, where would you sit on Dyche right now? Because I think it's a given that in any normal circumstances he would be under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Is it, like, I mean, that's
I
don't
think
that's, if Sean Dyche was listening to this, I don't think he could argue that, you know, that that's not a fair summary of what 12 win your 12 games.
In normal circumstances, he'd have been sacked based on Farah Moshe's history of pulling the trigger when
because it's just similar to Lampard, and he says,
Marco Silva,
run, isn't it really? Yeah, I mean, the reason why he's still managed it is, well, this podcast has proof, it took us 45 minutes to talk about football, didn't it really? In the list of Everton's priorities corporately at the moment, he's probably fourth on the list, isn't he? The manager's future after the ownership, handling the commissions and the impact of that, getting Bramley Moore built, the manager is probably fourth on the list.
And he's probably by a large part of people in football, and probably the football club seen as a safe pair of hands for the position they're in, given his experience.
And also seen as a safe pair of hands if the worst was to happen, bearing in mind he has experience of getting clubs out of the Championship.
But I suspect that was one of the reasons he was employed in the first place, wasn't he, really?
But
I totally agree. Any manager's gone 11, 12 games without a win has to be put under scrutiny. But at the same time, he has been given a bad hand in terms of all the stuff that he's had to manage around off the pitch, as we've just spoken about. And he's had we're just arguing against ourselves. We're saying about our 2022 splurge, and that got us a load of players that he inherited. But he hasn't had a great squad to pick from. The counter to that is the football is getting worse, isn't it? And performance is getting worse, and that can be very difficult to pull back. And I think I get what you're saying, kind of about long term planning. At the same time, you'd argue, well, like, give us some money, I could have a long term plan. But it's the trajectory, isn't it? It's very much downwards. We've shot ourselves in the foot. The last four goals, you can see the two penalties.
I asked him about that.
Yeah, two penalties, an own goal, and a goal.
I asked him about that after the game on Saturday, and you know, that's one of the things I said. I said, look, you know, probably one of the defining impacts that he had on that side was he took a brittle side and added resilience to it.
Yeah.
And in what's troubling is towards the end of this run, yeah, that resilience seems to have completely disappeared. You know, you had the situation on Saturday where they get a lucky stoppage time equaliser and they can't hang on and they still make another mistake to concede. You go to Old Trafford and they concede two stupid penalties.
Yeah.
You have Brighton.
The game's over after time.
You have Brighton where they're playing against 10 men in stoppage time. They can't hold on for a lead.
Mm.
You have West Ham where they miss all sorts of chances, albeit they created them, deserve credit for that, but then can't hold on. It's can't shut up shop at one each and get a valuable point. Like, it is a problem, isn't it?
Brighton as well. Is the sympathy, and I think that it's worth discussing, isn't it? Is the sympathy for Dyche? We've spoken about this whole situation with Everton being draining. It's draining for the players, draining for the fans, draining for the people who cover the club. Is the whole situation draining for Dyche and his, maybe his coaching team, and that is impacting his performance at the moment in terms of his bandwidth? All this stuff going on around the ownership, around PSR and stuff like that, he's got to handle that to a degree, and handle the normal coaching job, the business as usual stuff. Do you think that that's draining him And that's possibly been reflected in his management and performances of the team.
Is he also sat there somewhat psychologically thinking, we could do everything and everything here, but it still might not be enough because we could get docked 6 points by PSR the second time around again. and then 12 points in the season and all of a sudden, you know, that's four wins that we could have we've lost, you know.
Yeah, and you could respond to that on the flip side and ask, is he not liberated by the chaos of the club because he's in a situation where he can't really lose? He either he's already kept them up once, he keeps them up again with all these circumstances. Yeah. He's hailed as a miracle worker. If he takes them down, well, it was inevitable because look at the rubbish that he's had to deal with. And that's another element of it, isn't it?
There is a bit of a historical precedent to this where we are at the moment. And that's, strange enough, 93, 94, when we nearly went down on the last day, where Howard went. And then there was 6 months. There was a whole thing about getting the ownership sorted. And he brought Mike Walker in just to be a safe pair of hands. And he got a few early wins and he thought, we'll be okay now. We'll just stay in a holding pattern between now and the end of the season and we'll be all right. And once that happens, you become stale, don't you? Then you don't win again. And then you find it very difficult to rebuild momentum. And there's a little bit of that this season, isn't it? Where we've had all the stuff around the ownership, getting that sorted. Sean, your job is keep us up, and and then we got them 4 wins before Christmas. Then you think, we're okay now. Just stay in the holding pattern, like Mike Walker was asked to do, and like Walker, stop winning games. Mm-hmm. And he stopped winning games, and it's when that happens, when you think you become a little bit complacent, that maybe Christmas.
It's a lack of expectation. Lack of pressure.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think there's a pattern. I think with Walker's tenure here in the second half of that season, where we think we're going to stay up, so we'll just stay, as I say, just keep it stable for a bit. But then you start losing, you can't pick it back up, and Dice is in the same position now as what we were in around April, May 94, when we played Wimbledon. Exact same circumstances, all the ownership stuff, that's what the board's interested, not interested in the manager. And when that happens, you can be in dangerous territory. And I think that's where we are, I think.
Dice essentially said to me, it doesn't matter to him about the potential to break the record for the worst, the longest winless run in the league. I can understand to a certain extent where he's coming from. It's the wider context. Everton staying up is what matters, regardless of how they do it. Obviously, still outside the relegation zone at the moment, but it's obviously someone that is embedded within the Everton's history as yourself. Does this run and this record matter to you?
As a stat, it's good. Yeah, it's a good question. Now, I think it's where the record has taken us that matters to me. In that, I just think, going back to what I said before, it's 12 games without a win. But for the first 5 or 6, 7 games, performance is okay. We sat on this podcast thing. We've been a bit unlucky, but the trajectory's downwards. The mistakes are increasing on the pitch. It's not so much the 12 games within that. It's probably the last 3 or 4 that
I can see. Do we think that the record matters if it extends? The point where the record genuinely matters if it extends probably beyond Burnley at the weekend, isn't it? I know we're leaping above Newcastle, which we'll very briefly discuss in a second. But obviously, if Everton were to not win tomorrow, there isn't a way in which Burnley isn't a very big game at the minute. It's certainly a big opportunity.
Don't rock the preview, Burnley preview, Joe.
but at that point, it really does become problematic, doesn't it?
Saturday morning, we're talking about a new record being extended, i.e. it'd be 16 matches then?
It'd be 14 without a win if we don't win the next two this week. Three teams
going into Chelsea
But then you would see a mood change.
And I think also
people
probably
start asking questions.
Well, I think people already are starting to ask questions.
But I think that would prompt even more,
I think at that point, bearing in mind that we're anticipating a deduction as well, there's Evan would probably be
nervous,
if not in the relegation zone, very close to it. And I think that's an interesting, slightly terrifying angle to this week. Burnley play Wolves tomorrow, or this week, which, at Burnley. Now, Wolves are a good side. We've seen that twice ourselves this season. Burnley are probably looking outside, and if they're going to have any chance of staying up, then that's a game that they need to win. If they were to win and Everton were to lose, and Everton would get a points deduction, then all of a sudden, Burnley could have Everton in their sights at the midweek, and we make into the weekend, which makes an even bigger game. But we'll focus on...
Just a bit of comfort. It's three teams who stayed up in the Premier League era, haven't had not one for 14 games.
Oh, really?
During the season. So, you know, even if you don't win against Burnley, it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll go down. I know just the latest stats are, this is before the any points deduction, is we've got a 3% chance of going down. Really? To the Premier League Opta, or whatever it is.
But obviously what Opta won't take into effect is the points deduction. Interesting what I was told, tweeted earlier, I think, the season that Dyche qualified for Europe, he went 11 games without a win.
Yeah.
Watch out, Newcastle. Like, starts tomorrow, I'll be overhauling them soon and qualifying for it.
What's the matter? That'll be interesting.
We've been going on for ages now, so we'll briefly look at Newcastle. Newcastle without Anthony Gordon, Newcastle, a lot of injuries. Newcastle, Evan, have already beaten this season. I know things are bad, they've been bad for a while. I know it's 12 games without a win, so it might sound daft to say this, but Gav, they shouldn't go there with fear, should they? This is a game that they can get a positive result here, can't they?
Absolutely. I mean, that was a draining game, wasn't it, for Newcastle on Saturday. I know they won. And we could have easily got a point on Saturday, couldn't we, Bournemouth?
Yeah.
The whole frustrating thing about it, wasn't it, really? I mean, Bournemouth weren't great. You could have got a point easily, and we should have. And I feel the same about tomorrow night, really. You know, a point is there for the taking if we apply ourselves. Don't do anything stupid. No own goals, no penalties.
Cut the mistakes.
Do your jobs. And of course it is. I think there's always... I think when you get outside the top six or seven, if you apply yourselves at any given day and do the things properly, of course you can get a point.
That's the big thing for me tomorrow night.
Defeat yourself.
Yeah, don't be your own worst enemy.
Make them beat you. Yeah.
And I think that's the only thing we can say to preview Newcastle in many respects, isn't it? Is like, you look at the last few games, just don't do nothing stupid with that. Yeah. Just play your own game to the best of your ability, and we've got better results.
We've lost 4 points in the last four games in the 90th minute onwards, haven't we?
Hmm.
Which is just, imagine if we had an extra 4 points now. Maybe being the
table. Deduction would be irrelevant,
wouldn't it? Yeah, and that's the thing. And it's all because of doing stupid mistakes, not marking people properly and stuff. And if we avoid that tomorrow, I'm sure we can get a point.
Gav, prediction?
I'm going to be a normal bottle job 1-0 tomorrow all day long.
No.
I'm going to go 0-0 as well. I got Bert being positive at Bournemouth. I can't put myself in that position again. I do think it'd be very Evan to go and throw in what they've just done against Bournemouth, then go and actually beat a side that have got much loftier ambitions.
If you've got a nice historical precedence, remember in April 99, going to Newcastle, we were right near the bottom of the table. We remember you won 3-1.
And itself.
We didn't have Kevin Campbell playing up front for us then, so unfortunately he's not there tomorrow. But
that was long. It probably wasn't particularly enjoyable. Hopefully you found it interesting, and we'll be back later in the week to talk about whatever's happened at St James's Park, possibly the verdict of the second case, and definitely a very big game, which will actually be 2 years to the date since Everton lost at Burnley, when Dyche said that he told his players at half-time that Everton had forgotten how to win. What a backdrop for that. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been the Royal Blue Podcast.